Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. And, of course, I'm your host, Al Warren. Joining me as co-host today is David North Martino.
I'm here.
Where's my martini? He's a Scotch man, so I guess that's a whiskey man, sorry.
Whiskey, Scotch, bourbon.
Yeah, why don't you put down?
I'll go for anything.
You probably won't hear a lot of questions today because he's a double fist drinker, you know.
Yeah.
Poor cat. I put my vodka and coke to shame.
This poor cat, you know. So joining us from across the water, we've got author Sean Kerr. How are you doing?
Hello there. Very good, thank you.
So listen, I when I look at things, I it looks to me like you are. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you like to be described as a horror author?
Yes, I've got two hats, really. I write paranormal romances and I write horror, but more often than not, they cross over.
Well, that's kind of... I don't think I've had that mix before now that I'm thinking about it. Because it's like a paranormal romance that's a horror, so...
I started writing horror, and then I went into paranormal romances from an LGBT point of view. And then the two genres kind of merged, and I got picked up by a publisher, and that's what set me off, really. That's how it started. So I don't know how to describe myself. Am I horror? Am I paranormal romance? I'm both.
Well, then when you look at this, you got picked up by a publisher. That's great. But when you look at this, so when you say paranormal romance, so you're making this is something I've never written in myself. I've never written any romance, and I very seldom read romance. So your romance story, it's kind of set to a real romance, like it's a real couple. And you try to make it as real as possible, then you throw in the supernatural?
No, I always start from the supernatural aspect of it first. I've got to be perfectly honest with you. I knew nothing about paranormal romance when I wrote my first series. I didn't know about the books. I didn't know about gay literature, nothing at all. I just had this mad idea after watching a film. And I thought, oh, I wonder what would happen if I tossed that into the mix. And then I started doing the research and...
Well, do you... Okay, so where does the paranormal supernatural come from for you? Is it like you had experiences before in your own life or your own... you know what I'm saying? Like, did you have...
No, nothing. There's been the odd thing. We went... me and my husband went to a rather shady hotel, shall we say. In Sitges, just outside of Barcelona, and we had an experience there, not what you think, and it was like something was grabbing the sheets. That's the only thing I can ever say, but that didn't start me off on a career of writing. I've just always been fascinated by the paranormal and vampires and all of that sort of stuff. It's always been in me since I was a kid watching the Hammer horror films.
Oh, right. So you're really, you know, into the... Do you like Most Haunted then too? Or
I used to love Most Haunted. I kind of went off it when I discovered that the main guy was a fake. That kind of put me off.
Oh, he died too.
Derek Acora, yes.
Yeah, we had him on the show. I've had him. I've had David Wells, Karen O'Keefe, of course.
Well, I like David Wells. And we went to see Derek Acora live. And it was after that, really, that it put me off, because he picked somebody out of the audience and said, you're either going to give birth to the new messiah or a really famous footballer. And I'm sitting there thinking, what? And it was dreadful. And then it broke on the news about him being a fake. So it kind of put me off all of that then.
Well,
I did still watch it for a while.
I mean, if he picked you out as giving birth...
I was seriously in trouble.
Yeah, I was going to say
that would have made a fantastic one.
I was going to say that's obvious. He's not.
Wow. Hey, you never know these days.
You don't. So you're totally into it. But I have to ask. So how do you develop your character? Like, where do your characters come from? First of all, so in this book, Last Child Part One, your main characters. How do they get created in your mind?
The last child was an idea I had years and years and years ago, long before I was published. Samuel, the boy in it, is kind of based on me, because I had a really bad childhood with being bullied at school. And so everything that he goes through in those books is based on things that happened to me, not being possessed by the devil, obviously, although some would say otherwise. And I was befriended by a teacher in school who looked after me and encouraged me to carry on with my art and my writing. And so a bit of that dynamic, well, a lot of that dynamic comes from my experience of my school year lives, which were none too pleasant.
Yeah. So you're kind of taking it from your own experience. So it's,
yeah.
Okay. So if you were kind of like Samuel's based on you. So when things start happening that are a little bit more tragic or, you know, horror-ish or suspense, does that character Samuel act or react the same way that you would act?
I think I'd run down the road screaming with my arms in the air, to be honest. The thing is about Samuel is that he's trapped in an abusive childhood with his parents. I didn't have that many friends. I think I was always the odd one out. Well, definitely. And as I began to become aware of my sexuality, I kind of withdrew from the schoolyard, if you like. It was very uncomfortable. And... yeah, I think as a child, I'd have been very grateful for a friend who listened to me, who talked to me, who comforted me. That would have been wonderful. And that's what happens to Samuel. This voice is comforting him and telling him that he'll be all right. And he believes it.
So it's important. Do you have are you kind of writing a subtext within the story as well? Like, do you want someone to get something besides the ongoing suspense?
No, there was no deliberate subtext to it. Some people who have read it have talked about, you know, the forgiveness aspect of it and acceptance. That really wasn't at the core of it. I just wanted to try and tell a rollicking good story because I had all these twisty things going on in my head and I needed to get them down on paper. And because I love plots. I love really, really intricate plots and twists and turns. And I'm obsessed with religion, even though I'm not religious. And I love conspiracy theories. So all of that sort of Omen and Dan Brown stuff has been living in my head for such a long time that The Last Child was my way of trying to exercise that particular demon out of me down onto book form. And I suppose it was cathartic to write about somebody who got beaten up in school and stabbed and all the rest of it. That felt quite good to get that out of my system, I must admit.
How do you manage your storylines and your character arcs in your books?
I have loads of sheets of paper and cards. With The Last Child, it originally started out as a television script because I was going to night classes to learn script writing. And I did that for 2 years, and I loved it. I absolutely loved every single thing about that process. It was fantastic. But it was a huge learning curve, and one of the main things that I took away from that was that planning stage. No, I just have lots of cards with ideas for scenes, and then I try to put them in order. You know what it's like. You throw some out if they don't fit, if they don't work. You put others in until I'm happy with the order, and I'm happy that the story makes sense, you know, that it has a solid start, middle, and conclusion. And then I go for it. I have all my research around me and I go for it.
Did you find that making the transition from, let's say, screenwriting to prose to novels, did you have any difficulty with that? Did you find that doing novels was
only from the point of view that I tried to do it seriously? And what I mean by that is ever since I was a kid, I've written stories. My favourite show on the telly when I was growing up was Doctor Who. I'm a Tom Baker fan. And I used to write my own Doctor Who stories. I used to write my own ghost stories. Then I saw Alien for the first time. And that sent me off on one, so I wrote a sequel to Alien. All the things you do when you're a kid. Yeah?
That's great.
So I've always written. But a few failed attempts to try and do something properly with it. The first time I sat down and wrote absolutely seriously with the intention of doing something with it was the script for The Last Child, which I sent to the BBC and various places. And I had great feedback about it, but nothing ever happens. And so it sat on the shelf for years until I had my first series of books published by Ecstasy Books. And then I went back to The Last Child and thought, that needs to be a book. It's not a script. It needs to be a book. So the bones of it was already there. It needed to be fleshed out properly. The characters needed to be developed. I tweaked the story. I tweaked the story quite a lot. Everything that you need to do, you know what it's like when you see a film and you read the book. They're two different entities, aren't they? They just seem so different to each other. And I really enjoyed that process, I have to say. I found it easier to write those books than I have any of my others.
What do you think makes a good book? For you, what makes a good book?
I want to be knicker-gripped. I want it to grab me by the short and curlies and make me want to turn the next page, and I need to find out what happens. And if they don't tell me at the end of that chapter, then I need to read on and find out. There's a book by a lady called, her name is Elizabeth Kostova. And it's my favorite book in the whole world. And it's called The Historian. And it's a historical telling of Dracula. And it's not all bats and capes and all of that. It's not Bram Stoker's Dracula. It's Dracula the Vampire from a historical point of view. And it's an astonishing book with the most incredible historical detail. And it's told in a very unusual format. terrified the bejesus out of me. It's so creepy. And it's always that book I go back to because that's where I want to be. That's what inspires me. That's what drives me. And that's the sort of thing I want to try and do and aim for. I'm not saying I ever succeed, because who does? But you try. Every time you write something, you try. And that book by Elizabeth Kostver, I've read it dozens of times. And I will keep reading it because it spurs me on and makes me want to write better.
It's because it's the only book you own. Sitting in the bathroom.
Caught me! Yeah.
I knew it.
I want to say about Twilight then. Keep that quiet, Sean.
So, you know, it's interesting, but so with each writer, I always like to find out, so you said you've been writing since you were a kid, so you were fairly young. So what was it in your life, or what happened to you to a point where you felt like you were confident enough to write something that you were going to send into a publisher or send into somewhere to be published? Like, where did that confidence come from?
I've never been confident. I've never had the confidence. My first published book is called Dead Camp, and it's a paranormal romance. It's a series of five books about a vampire in World War II, and it's all to do with, again, it's very heavy on conspiracy and religion. And I didn't believe for one minute I would get that book out there because it's so out there and it's very, very rude in places. And it's really raw and rough. And it took me 2 years to write it. And I sent it to every single publisher I could find in that artists and authors yearbook. And as well as a load of others I found on the internet. And when everybody says no, you think, oh, right, delete, start again, write something else. And then Ecstasy Books came along and published it. So I've never, ever had the confidence to do it. And I've had numerous books that I've started and put down just because you think, why am I doing this? Why am I spending endless hours and lying abed, in bed awake at night thinking of plots when nothing's going to happen with it? And it's a very frustrating feeling when you're that way inclined, because some people just have to write. Yeah. And I know that sounds like a dreadful cliche if you give me for saying it, but the last 2 years in particular, I've been teetering as to whether to continue or not. And then I think, right, I am going to stop. I'm going to concentrate on other things. But you don't. You have to go back to it. And I always find I just go back to it because I love it. So I've come to the conclusion that things will either happen or they won't. You keep trying and it'll either happen or it won't. But if you're loving the process and you're loving the writing and you're enjoying it, then that's fine. And that,
but the computer says no.
Don't get me wrong. Who doesn't write and want to be well known and have everybody read their books and then have a movie or a mini series made of it? Yeah, that would be absolutely divine. Of course it would. But you do get to a point after 10 books and you think, okay, that might not ever happen, Sean. So what do you do about it? You either stop or you carry on and you just carry on as you were.
So you think it's more important to write for yourself? Like, so when you're writing a book, you know, you've got a story to tell and you want people to be involved and read it. But ultimately, it's more about your process that's coming through, that you're going to do it no matter what?
No. It's more about having a story and finding out where that's going to take you. Paranormal romances has a lot of rules to it. And I've never, ever stuck to any of those rules. It's probably why I'm unknown. You know, a paranormal romance is supposed to end all happy, holding hands, lovey, kissy, kissy. Oh, rubbish. No. No, I like cliffhangers. I like killing people, as long as it makes sense to the story. I hope the neighbours can't hear that. I like to shock people. I like to mess about with what you think is going to happen. I use history an awful lot in my books, so I love to mess around with history and completely screw around with your perception of what you think you know. So, no, I it's more about writing things that really, really interest you and excite you, rather than sticking to rules or writing to formula. I cannot write to formula and all of that sort of stuff. No, and there's nothing, I don't mean any of that to sound pretentious or any, it's not, it's about, it really is about writing something that when you reread it, you go, oh yes, that's right, you got it, that's it. And that really spurs you on. And that's what I find exciting.
So do you ever go back to some of your older books, some of the first books you've written and published, and kind of go, I would change this, you know, like, do you have that as well or no?
I think all of us must do that, really, if we're going to be honest. If I had to write my Dead Camp series again, would I change this? Yes. But you don't. It's there. It's written. It's, people have read it. It's finished with us, really. The Last Child trilogy, my biggest mistake with that was releasing it in three parts instead of as one great big book. So if I could go back and do that differently, I probably would, which is why I released the omnibus version of it. Yeah, I think we'd all do that if we could. Certainly from a plot point of view, you might think, ooh, what if that had happened instead? You'd go, shit, I missed a trick there. Yeah. That can be really irksome.
Well, I just wonder also, do you feel like each time you write a book, you feel like you've become a better writer? And when you go back to something you did, let's say, 5 years ago, you were at a different point in your life, so you probably are a better writer today. Do you have that kind of perspective?
Yeah, I think most writers would say the same. You're always learning, aren't you? You're always improving. You're always trying to make you're deliberately trying to make your writing better. You're deliberately trying to make your characterization better, your plotting better, your pacing better. Yeah, all of that you learn with every single book. The series I'm writing at the moment, I'm really stuck on the fourth book. It's really doing my head in. I'm absolutely frozen me. And yet it came from my favourite book I ever wrote, which is called The Man Inside Me. No euphemism intended. And it's frozen me. And I wish I could go back and change things in the first three books so that I wouldn't be stuck now in book four. We all do that.
It's a pretty interesting life being a writer and being involved in this process. Who do you read for inspiration, or do you? Do you find anybody that really kind of inspires you to write?
I'll always go back and read Elizabeth Costner, because that book is just my absolute favorite. The Stephen King, certainly his early books, huge influence on me, Stephen King, especially Salem's Lot. Charlaine Harris, I love her books. And she really inspired me when it came to the paranormal romance stuff, because reading her Sookie Stackhouse series of books, which I adore, told me that you can break the rules, you can mess about with the narrative, you can do things to characters that perhaps you shouldn't. And she made it work, so why can't you have a bash? Yeah, people like her I absolutely adore. And I must admit, I love the Twilight books by Stephanie Meyer. I've read them 18 times. Sorry, I feel really guilty now.
So you're really trying to create a fantasy, in a sense, when you write.
It depends on the genre. If it's paranormal romance, then yes, it's fantasy. If it's horror, I try to keep my horror as real-world based as I can, because I always think that's far more scary than trying to set something in a distant land that you've made up. I think I find it much easier to write within the real world, so you've got something as a point of basis that you can then mess around with.
So now that we know you are the main character, how do you develop the characters that you run into in the book around you? Like, how do you decide on what you want to face?
That's all done in the plot when I'm plotting it out, you know, I sort of have an idea of who the characters are going to be, what characters I need. And it's all happens in tandem to working out that plot. So you know how it's going to start, hopefully, and you should hopefully always know how it's going to end. I knew I had to have the teacher. I knew that David played a significant role in the book because of who he is. So he had to be a certain type of way. He had to be enigmatic and mysterious. And then as you learn about him and who he is, it all becomes apparent. Christina King, who is the teacher, she started off with a very tragic childhood. And it's about her learning about her parents and why they died and who she is and where that leads to. So it's all those plot points that develop the characters. They start off as one thing, like she's this balls of brass teacher who goes in and chucks kids over her shoulder when somebody's beating up Samuel. And, you know, she's kind of a hero, and yet she turns into this mess, really, by the time things start happening and she's starting to learn the facts of her past. And then when she finally learns how her and Samuel are connected, she kind of transforms into this strong, not quite Ripley, but she's this strong woman who, you know, she needs to save him at all costs, and she's going to do whatever she can to save him. So that's how my characters sort of develop. It's always around the plot. I know who they are in your head. You have this backstory planned for them, don't you, normally, to try and round off their personalities. But the story then molds them, changes them as it moves on.
So the personalities for the characters, are they from people you know, or people you sort of see on the street, or are they just someone you see in a coffee shop? what is that? Where do they come from?
Well, Mrs. Griffiths, who's the other teacher in the book, the old teacher, the old woman, she's a bit of a crusty old cow, that one, and she really doesn't care what comes out of her mouth. And I had a maths teacher in school who was exactly like her, and her nickname was the Dragon Lady. No reference to Game of Thrones. And it was a very long time ago. And so her sort of gruffness and the way she speaks and the way she reacts to things kind of comes from my experiences with that maths teacher. As I say, as we now know, Samuel's kind of me. Christina is my art teacher, who was very kind to me and looked after me. And David had to be made up completely, and I can't give away who he is without giving everything away. And so you have to make him up. There's no point of reference.
We just want to know where the people come from that you kill in your books.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, rather lovely murder of a bully, which I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed writing that, because if I could have been like Damien as a kid and done that to all the people who stabbed and punched me, marvellous. No, I don't need that. Not really. He says with a vodka in his hand. No. Again, we've all had people we've had to deal with in school and college and work, and so their personalities sort of stick around with you, don't they? And it's inevitable that they sort of creep into your writing somewhere along the line.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
And even if you can't remember, I can't remember the names of half the people I went to school with, but I can remember what they were like, and I can remember some of their personality traits, and that just creeps in.
So in essence, you are killing off people that have been mean to
you. My entire school year is dead.
Just taking them all out.
Doesn't bode well for the end of the book. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Clean house. Clean house.
Yeah, that's right.
What you're writing this series now, or the series is out or coming out. Where do you go from here?
Well, I need to get this series finished. It's a paranormal romance, and it's going to be my last one for a while because I want to go back to my horror roots. I really need to get back into my horror writing because I've got a couple of books and notes on my computer, which I really need to get stuck into. The series I'm writing now is a romance, but with heavy horror elements in it. It's a sort of retelling of classic Universal monster favorites. I just need to get that out of the way and then concentrate on horror. I've got a book that I've started called The Queller Event, which is a sci-fi horror. Again, it's set in contemporary period. And I think what I'm going to try and do now, I've been self-published for a while. I've been with a small publishing agency, publisher for a while. So I think my next move is to try and get into a larger publishing house if I can. I've tried it before. It failed. But now I've got 10 books under my belt, a lot of experience, even though you're still learning. And so I'm hoping I can crack that one. I really am.
Oh, God. It's just about being in the right place and meeting the right person and it connecting and all that, more than anything. Don't let them tell you anything else, because there's some really, really awful writers out there that have big publishing deals.
Yeah, but I mean, there's also some absolutely astonishing authors out there who are just not being read and being noticed. And that's such a difficult thing, whether you're with a publishing house or self-published.
Yeah.
I think with the self-publishing world, there are so many books being thrown out there that it's like drowning in an ocean of books. So how on earth do you get seen? Yeah. Well, we all do social media, don't we? I mean, I'm on Twitter constantly and Facebook and Instagram. You know, you do all of that. And I've done so many Facebook lives. I think my lips have fallen off. Yeah. And yet you're still lucky if you're selling a handful of books a week, if that.
Well, I think that most of that stuff, social media for me, for the most part, I think it just brands you, gets people to know your name and what you do. It doesn't necessarily result in sales until there's a reason for someone to come buy your book. Do you know? It's kind of an unusual thing, because a lot of people do a lot of things on social media and they get upset because it's like, well, I only sold 6 books or 20 books or whatever. And it's like, well, it's because it doesn't turn into instant results. The more you do, the more you get circulated in this world, this, you know, this imaginary world online. and what happens is then you become branded. All of a sudden, everybody will know Sean Kerr as the horror. Well, I meant horror author, of course, but not horror tour.
Oh, I might borrow that.
Yeah.
But I feel a new logo coming on.
Yeah, well, exactly. But that's it, you know, but it's just, yeah, it's catching because as soon as something happens where everybody wants to know who you are, wants to pay attention, and then you blow up. But the rest of it's just branding. You just have to keep at her. To patent yourself, sort of. I think that's how it is. That's in my opinion.
Well, that's the one thing I have always struggled with is the exploding bit. Like, I know euphemism is meant. I mean, I've got a wonderful PA who happens to be a very close friend of mine, and she posts, Maggie Lane, her name is, she's a wonderful woman. And she posts all my books in literally thousands of Facebook groups a month. But you have to think there's so much of that going on. I haven't got a bottomless pit of money to be able to advertise things and use Amazon adverts. And it's just never ending. All these things you can advertise on, you'd spend a fortune. And I think the only way for me is to try and find a larger publishing house who kind of do a lot of that with you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're more in the real world. There's two worlds, and they're, you know, if you want to have more of a presence in a bookstore, the ones when you publish with a company like that, it tends to be it'll be in the books. You'll be in bookstores everywhere, you know, and they'll have some percenting to it, and sign you up for book signings and stuff like that. I guess it results in more sales for sure. Yeah.
Now that is a dream of mine, is to see one of my books on a bookshelf in a bookstore or a library. That must be such a wonderful feeling to walk in and see a book on a shelf like that. Ooh, yeah, I've just got goose pimples. That sounds lovely. Yes, please.
It isn't. It isn't. I never got one goosebump for that.
Oh, come on, don't rain on my parade, please. I was having a
no, because you find it and someone stuck some gum to your cover and...
Oh, yeah. Well, you know the answer to that, don't you? Write a book and kill them off.
Yeah, well, there you go. I follow the real thing. So so when you write, so when you say you want to go back to horror, what is it that people... What kind of horror do you like? Do you like the old-fashioned, old classic horrors? Or do you like kind of this new graphic sort of more detailed horror like they have nowadays?
I'm not so keen on the slasher flick horror. That doesn't do it for me, you know, like the Saw films. Even though, you know, the first Saw film is very clever, and I really like the first one. But every film after that is just a different way to kill people. And I don't want to read books like that. That and writing that sort of thing doesn't excite me. I like plot. I like detailed, intricate plot. And I like things that make you shiver. So I do like a lot of the old horror films. I love all the old black and white Universal horror movies, though they're not really frightening, are they? But things like The Exorcist, The Omen films, I absolutely adore those. And then... fantastic Dan Brown and his conspiracy theories. I think that all combines with horror very, very well. And it's that sort of thing that really interests me.
Geez, with a conspiracy theory, you must just be in your heyday now, right?
You can't sit on Facebook without seeing one these days.
Well, yeah, you've got the Jewish laser beams causing Texas to get snow, and you've got...
Oh, good grief.
Well, geez, that's what I mean, but there's tons of these conspiracy theories out there. It's just crazy, right? You must be having a great time.
Well, it's things like technology that really interest me. I mean, who would have thought that we'd all end up with a little box in your room that you talk to turn the lights on or switch the channels or buy your coffee for you? I mean, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, that's unheard of. So that fascinates me, and I think that brings to mind classic books and films like Demon Seed, and which is horrific, when you boil that down to an artificial intelligence inseminating a woman to give birth to a new life form is horrific. And I think that sort of thing, I think there's room for that sort of horror in amongst all the slasher gore stuff.
Yeah. So it's more about suspense in a way. You know, that kind of build up horror in the mind than just...
Yeah, I don't want to see the monster, but I want to hear it. And I want to hear the breathing or the heartbeat or the creaking floorboard or see a shadow in the darkness. I mean, I'll tell you the story now.
Still talking about your horror books? Or?
But you never know with me.
Okay, I thought we were getting into romance.
That's another conversation.
Yeah, I thought you got into the romance there.
I'll tell you a story, and it made it into one of my latest books. I used to be a smoker, and I went one of the times I was trying to give up, I had a packet of cigarettes in my pocket, so I sneaked out the conservatory to have a pack outside when my other half was getting ready to go out. And it was pitch black, and we've got a walled garden, so there's walls on all sides of us. And I looked around, and all I saw what looked like a head with horns sitting on the wall. And as I say, it was pitch black, so it was just this outline of a head sitting on the wall with horns. And then it wobbled. I nearly had a coronary on the spot. Because you know what it's like when you're a writer? You've got this mad imagination. Your head goes to all sorts of places. Well, as it turned out, it then uncurled and it was a flaming cat. I've never been so relieved in all my born days. But that scene, that gave me such a turn. I've always remembered that, and it made it into one of my books. And then when I was a kid, I had this terrible, terrible nightmare about these things invading a school at the bottom of my garden. Not that there was a school, but stay with me. And they were coming out onto the street and their faces were flying off at people. And that dream has haunted me for going on 45 years. It terrified me at the time. And that's going to be a book. So there we are. Go figure. I think I need to be locked up.
Well, no, you fit totally the world nowadays. So, yeah. you can be the next Boris Johnson.
Oh dear God, I nearly choked then. Thank you. For one, he's got more hair than I have. And two, it ain't happening. Oh, don't talk to me about that, man.
Oh, well, we were talking horror. I just thought.
Yeah, he's definitely a British horror. That's the British horror story. That's right.
Would fit right in. Well, you know what? Okay, so I'm interested in this for all writers, but as a person that writes suspense, thriller, horror, conspiracy, paranormal, like the, you know, darker kind of areas in writing, when things like what's gone on in the world, let's say in this last year, like, you know, you got the pandemic, you got Boris Johnson as prime minister now, you had Trump, you had all this, and then you had all the other stuff going on. So with all of that going on around you every single day, you've got this, it's on the news, it's just, you know, all this stuff going on. Does that affect your writing?
Yeah, big time. I think, you know, we've been living a horror story for want of a better description, haven't we? It's been a year of constant horror, and it does affect you because it puts you into a very dark place. When you're in lockdown, Wales has been in lockdown, our third lockdown since December the 20th, so I haven't seen family and friends in a very long time. And it really puts you on the edge. And that sort of darkness does creep into your writing, there's no doubt about it. And it also fuels your plot bunnies for future projects. Not that I would write about a pandemic, and I certainly wouldn't do that now, because that just doesn't seem right, not when we live in the flipping thing. But, you know, things like lockdown, you could write a story about lockdown and something horrific happens to you while you're in lockdown, and of course you can't get help because you're in lockdown. So there's all sorts of things that spring from that sort of situation, really.
Yeah, I it's just, it's interesting because I get back and forth. I mean, we talked to an English writer yesterday that it had no effect at all on.
some people are affected different. Everybody's different, aren't they?
Yeah.
We all deal with things very differently. I mean, I'm used to being at home. I'm used to working at home. I have been for the last 3 years. But being stuck at home and told that you can't go out and you can't go and see your mum and dad or your friends and you can't go down the pub, that's a very different thing. And you might be all right with it for a while, and then as it goes on and on and on, it just drags you down to this, oh, for God's sake, when's all this going to end sort of mentality. Yeah. And you kind of get annoyed and angry when you see people flouting the rules and spreading the virus, and you think, right, come on, you lot, behave. Otherwise, we're never going to get out of this.
Yeah, well, you know, and keeping you away from the pub. God, that's enough to kill.
Oh, yes. I tell you, thank God for my fridge. Really.
Well, you know, but I heard that the COVID was fake. It's not real.
Well, I can categorically say my husband is a nurse, and he works in intensive care and infection control in the biggest hospital in Cardiff, in Wales, sorry. And the last year has been an absolute torment for him. And so I've worried about him every day he goes to work. Thank God we haven't been touched by the dreaded box. It hasn't come anywhere near us. But well, you never know from one day to the next whether he's going to catch it. And seeing what he goes through every day, I can categorically say it's real.
Yeah, aren't they all actors? Come on, run with it.
Oh, my God, I haven't heard that one.
Oh,
that
just
can't be, really, that can't be true.
Yeah, there's groups saying that now. But
God's sake.
But, you know, but that's kind of come on, we can run with this. This is a good story.
This is your next book.
Yeah. Let's get it, you know. This sounds
so good. I really have had a microchip injected into my arm then last Saturday.
Yes.
Yeah. Bill Gates is on you now.
Oh, I thought it was Putin. Damn.
Well, Bill Gates is really Putin without a shirt. I don't know. Yeah, they're all the same. They just wear a mask. It's just, it's all fantasy.
You know? Is it really a mask or is it a face? Is there something else under there?
Yeah. Well, he's a reptilian. Like the
yeah, I was gonna say that.
It's V all over again, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, what can I say? You know, hey, life only gets better.
But what sort of horror do you like? What sort of horror?
Well, I like classic. I really enjoy the classic, and because it's more about the story, right? It's the imagination and it's the build up. So, you know, like the Hammer films are fun, and I watch I still watch all the old ones. I kind of make fun of some of it because of the acting, but it's totally better. I listen to a lot of books. Because I've had cataract surgery on both eyes, so it's a struggle reading them as much.
Right.
And so, Dracula and Frankenstein, I listen to a lot of the classics. So
see, that they fascinate me. They've always absolutely fascinated me.
And they're so well written. They're so developed. There's so much to them.
Yes, there's a pathos to them that a lot of people just don't realize, especially with the first Frankenstein movie.
Right.
On the book, actually, on the book.
Yeah, that's what, you know, that's why when you go to the book and, you know, been listening, it's just like, it's crazy how many differences and how much more complex it is. And I think that's great. And I think that's what I like. I think that most of the modern day horrors tend to be more about upfront killing and it's graphic and it's as brutal as can be. And the effects are incredible. Like on these series and movies and things that they put on TV and stuff. But after a couple of hours, there's not a lot of content.
Yeah. My classic, as far as that sort of thing is concerned, is Alien. Because you really don't see that alien very much, do you? You see very little of it. And yet it remains possibly one of the most terrifying things you ever see on the screen. And then... Yeah. Later films just don't have the same impact because it's all about the aliens seeing the whole thing. You know, they're everywhere and it's all CGI. So the effectiveness and that terrible creep factor isn't there.
Yeah, totally. And that's exactly it. That's kind of what does it. It's like The Thing, right? You know, that was another one, right? It's done so well when you, it's really not about The Thing. It is, but it's not. Do you know what I'm saying? Like when they modernize it, it all becomes about something really.
Well, I love the black and white film of The Thing. I've got, that's one of my prized possessions in my cabinet. But I also love John Carpenter's version. I adore it.
Yeah, that was done well. It really, for more of a modern, I was going to say, but that was still probably 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah. Even it definitely longer. Was, yeah.
I was a kid. I'm probably, 52 now.
It's probably 1980. I've
recently read the book. Have you read the book? There was a new edition of the book brought out, which was an extended version of it, of Who Goes There. And it was recently discovered. And so they published it. And it's an incredible read. It's so different to the original. There's so much more story to it. It's really, really good. I really enjoyed it.
It's interesting. Yeah, no, I haven't heard that one. But So here we are. So now, do you have a website or do you anything like that that people can come find you at, or where do you like to be stalked?
www.deadcamp.com is my website. I'm terrible at keeping it updated. I really need to do more work on that. Yeah. Or find a slave to do it for me. You can reach me on that, but most of my content is always on social media. I say Facebook is probably the best place to find me. I'm always posting my book stuff there and my other interests on that, and I have various groups on Facebook. I'm on Instagram as well. And Twitter, SJK69 on Twitter. Don't say a word.
Yeah, okay. We're going to have that on. We'll put that up on the... Yeah. We'll put that up on the website. And also, and Grindr.
Damn, my secret's out.
Yeah.
That's we're locked out, so we can't meet this stuff.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you. So, here we go. So now... I was going to say, just before we finish and stuff, is there any writer that you'd like to write with?
Oh, they're all dead.
Well, that could work in a paranormal.
I'm a huge Bram Stoker fan, of course. Actually, I'd love to write with Elizabeth Kostova or Charlene Harris. That would be a hoot. That would be an absolute dream. One of my best friends is called Ian Cadena, and he writes urban fantasy books. And we've always said that we would write together at some point. I just don't know how that would work and how the dynamics of that would work. That's really difficult to do, I think, because I can't start writing until I know the voice of a character. So that is... more often than not, the jumping off point for me to get stuck in is when I find that character's voice and it works and you're like, right, okay, that's how they're going to be. So to have somebody else then write for that character in the same book, I don't know. I don't know whether I'd be a bit, really? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you'd have to be on the same page for sure. You have to have a connection about what kind of story you want to tell. There has to be.
I mean, I've been a part of anthologies. I've done a couple of anthologies. And when I first was professionally involved in this industry, I did an anthology for the Pulse Shootings way back when. And we pulled together a book of love stories to help raise funds for the Pulse Shooting victims. And that was an absolute nightmare, I can tell you. I was so innocent up until that point. Talk about being thrown in at the deep end with all these huge personalities and egos. And I thought, oh, my God. And so ever since then, I've been very reluctant to get involved in anything else that involves a lot of other people.
Yeah, that's true. You have to be careful with that, with the personality and what you're going into. It's not always easy, and it's not always a pretty thing, right? It's not always...
But I bet you learn a lot doing it, though. I bet it's quite a learning curve when you're working with somebody on a book rather than a series of stories.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that you get out of this, it's a creative thing. So when you have, when you're telling a story, like for me, it's a real story, but I might have a point of view where I want to start the story, where I want people to start and then bring them back, or you go through the details. And sometimes you work with another writer, they throw a different idea at you, and it kind of opens your eyes to new perspectives. And sort of it kind of adds a flavor. I guess it's like the Beatles. You have, you know, opposing people that throw in the ideas, and it comes out pretty good.
I bet that works really well in your sort of genre as well. I mean, my hat's off to you. I don't know whether I could do what you do. I really don't.
Oh, me either. I tell you.
I mean, my day job, I'm a content writer for an American company. Thank God it's all done online. But that's all factual based, and I write articles for various blogs and online magazines. And that is, I find that so difficult because you have to be so factual.
Yeah.
Whereas I like to mess around with facts. And
well, I think for that it's true. You go there. But what you do is you take trips out and you meet like the killer. You meet people that are involved. You meet families. So it gives it, you can write your perspective and personality into that, your story. Do you know what I mean?
God, I bet you've got some stories to tell.
I do.
Wow.
I do. I have some moments, but you know, it's all good as far as I'm concerned. For the most part, there is some hard parts, but it's good overall. But yeah, it's interesting. That's that word again. Interesting. we'll leave it at that.
It's got a lot to answer for, hasn't it, that word?
It really yeah. It leaves it open to suggestion. It's interesting.
Story of my life.
Yeah. Well, how long does it take you to put together a book, do you think?
Usually, the paranormal romance stuff usually takes about 6 months for a book. Although my first ever one was 2 years, but that wasn't writing full time. The horror, I can usually get round to doing a first draft, perhaps 6 months to a year. Hmm. Because I'm at home all the time, I tend to do things for my day job at home and then work all night on the book side of it.
Right.
So I have more time to do it, perhaps, than many others would. So that's the only advantage I've got. But perhaps that's too long, I don't know. I know people who can turn out a book every couple of weeks, and I just don't understand that. I can't do it.
Well, I should end this up. I should say it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this, and I'm very, very grateful for you giving me the opportunity.
Oh, it's our pleasure to talk to someone that can write. I can barely do that. I can graduate. The book we're talking about is The Last Child, and the author is Sean Kerr. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very, very much, and please take care, both of you.
Thanks, Sean.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Has been completed.
The end! By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll tell you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.